It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, Closet Busters. Bet you can't remember what time it is. Of course you have. You've been listening to the show forever. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth. And today I want to take you on a little bit different journey. We're going to go kind of back to where that truth began. Maybe look at this as if we're going back to the roots, to where it all started for you. Now, this could be where you were born, or it could be that place you call home. Maybe that place you call home right now. Doesn't really matter. What matters is that when you go back to these places, you find some way of grounding yourself, learning to ground yourself in who you are, regardless of where you live and regardless of your sexual orientation. Now, I realize that can be a rather daunting task, especially when the prospects of being who you are sometimes leads to some pretty damn unpleasant situations, maybe being disowned or thrown out of your home or causing you to lose friends or maybe even jobs because of who you truly are in your sexual orientation. Now, on the other side of that coin, it can be really beautiful because you can finally say, I'm me and I'm from wherever that is that you hail from and like to call home. My guest today, since March of around 2009, has been helping people really tell these stories. He's been curating stories of people from all over the world, chronicling their lives in an open, honest, and genuine conversation where he looks at what it's like to be LGBTQ in the world. His website is called I'm From Driftwood, and he has some of the best stories I've ever seen about what it really means to be living an LGBTQ life in today's modern world. Welcome to the show, my friend Nathan Mansk. Hey, Nathan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm excellent, man. It's been a while since we've chatted, but you just keep doing this stuff, chronicling these stories and kicking ass, man. I love it.
Thanks. Yeah, it has been a while.
Probably what? I think you and I met 2010, 2011, somewhere in that range. And
I think it was 2011.
So how many stories do you actually have now at this point in time?
We have just over 1,000 stories of first person LGBTQ stories. And most of those, you're exactly right, that we launched in March 2009. And we started as simply written stories. So right. People would submit their written stories. So most of the stories are written. But soon after launching, we started doing the video stories, which, you know, they take more time. So we have fewer of them. Sure. But people, I think, like those a lot more than the written stories because, well, people don't like reading.
Us humans, as now we have video and all this other stuff, it's like we get lazier and lazier in how we like to communicate. So,
yeah. And there's pros and cons to each. I think that the video stories it's nice to see. It adds an extra element of connection. You get to see their mannerisms and their eyes and, you know, you get to see them move and talk and you get to know them a little bit more in the video stories. But the other side of that is with written stories, there are, you know, writing techniques that kind of reflect who they are also. So it goes both ways, but the video stories are definitely more popular.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're videoing this, even though you're not dressed appropriately. So I just wanted to make you know that. I'm kidding, of course. So I know the story, but I want to have you kind of share what was the impetus for you starting to do this. I mean, there was a defining moment that you kind of said, I want to do something that really shares these stories. So what was that for you?
The year was, I'll set the stage as if I'm telling my own story. The year, it was in 2008, and I had been working in advertising for 4 years at the time.
Sure.
And I went to school for advertising, so my life and my career world was all about advertising. And I really enjoyed it, actually. I really enjoyed the creative process. I was a copywriter. In the advertising world, you get to meet some really great, interesting, different people, creative people. Then you meet directors and photographers and artists, and you get to travel for work. There's really a lot to be said for advertising as a career. If anyone wants to go down that path, I would recommend it. But after a few years of doing that, of enjoying that process, of the creative process, at the end of the day, like once you do it enough, I mean, at this point, I'll stop talking about other people and just talk about myself. What I did, I started realizing that at the end of the day, I didn't have purpose in my life. I never hated going to work, which was really, I felt so selfish for wanting more when I already had that luxury of not hating my job, you know, like so many people do. And I felt selfish for wanting more. I was like, how lucky am I to not hate my job? And you hear people hating their jobs so often that I felt like that should be enough, but it wasn't. Because at the end of the day, I was creating ads that, you know, if I was successful, we would have sold more cars or more like beverages or, you know, products. Sure. And that didn't affect me at all. That it was so far removed from me. And I had no involvement or care about that. So I was kind of going through that struggle. And I think it's very common for people in advertising, you know, to kind of second guess what they're doing. It's a common dilemma, I think.
Well, it's not just a common dilemma in advertising. I think there's definitely a world right now surgence towards, I want to be doing something of purpose, especially, you know, in your generation and the millennial generation. It seems like this is the thing that kind of is driving most people. They want, yes, they want success. They want to be entrepreneurial, whatever that is. But underneath that, for a lot of them is, and when I do this, there's got to be a really, really deep-seated purpose behind what I'm doing in my life's work.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this is taking a step way back. I think as generations have evolved and what we've been told as children has evolved, you know, first it was get married, have kids, get a house, you know, and you'll be okay, you know, because that came from baby boomers. And that's, yep. And that, honestly, I think the right message because of where the world was at the time. Stability and security was so important at that time.
Sure.
But then what we heard and what people are hearing now is do what you want, you know, find what you love and do it.
Yep.
And I think it's a really great evolution of what we're passing on to future generations. And I think there's a lot of negativity towards the millennial generation because they feel entitled and they want, you know, they're like, I want this and I want this. And it's, well, that's because what we keep telling them. But it's a good thing, I think. And I think that they're like, well, I don't want to work in this office job. I want to go create something, and they go create something. And it's wonderful. Like we should keep pushing that message that you can do whatever you want. I mean, that's what previous generations struggled for and fought for, to make it better and easier for the future. So
I think you guys are also seeing something that is so interesting, because I'm in just a couple hours after we get done taping this, I'm going to go speak on a stage at a university. And one of the people I'm going to be speaking with, he's 76. And he has such an interesting philosophy because he's not a baby boomer. Obviously, he's beyond baby. And he also grew up in the South, where at the time that he was growing up, we were in our deepest racial tensions as a nation with, you know, the African-American movement and everything. And it's so interesting when he gets up to talk, because he's not gay or lesbian. So I'm going to speak on a gay and lesbian performance stage is basically what it is. It's a talk around being gay, coming out, all that sort of stuff. But he comes and he speaks because he sees this as, this just isn't right. Equality is equality. And his main thing that he always leaves the audience with is, you guys need to take and carry this banner, because pretty soon all of those of us, you know, he kind of puts it in a generalized term, all those of us that won't allow this will finally be gone. And then the world will be a different place. Now, of course, he knows as well as anybody that just because, quote, his generation may be gone doesn't mean it will be 100% better place. But to your point, I think when we allow ourselves to let the generations continue to carry different flags and banners and move things forward, that's when the inciting change begins to happen. And that's when we become better in who we are. And part of the work that you're doing with I'm From Driftwood and everything else you got going is moving that forward.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And to finish, sorry, I think we got off on a total tangent.
We did, but I wanted to make sure we got there, because it was like what you're talking about is that piece of allowing your generation to continue to move forward and have a voice in the way that you're having. So now we're going to go back to where we were and pick up from there.
Yeah, I was having that dilemma of needing purpose in my life, and I was really struggling with that for about a year, all of 2008. And, you know, that was when Obama was running for election, and I, you know, for the first time volunteered for a political campaign and just getting more involved in the community. And I've always been politically conscious and, you know, always voted, and I, you know, cared about the LGBT community, but I was just getting more fired up and wanting to do more. And then Prop 8 passed, and it just turned into rage. And I was so angry, so excited and hopeful about Obama being elected, but so disappointed about Prop 8. And all I had was the desire and passion to do something, but I didn't know what I could do. Just put that out there that I wanted to do something. And then a few weeks after the election, I went on vacation, went to Australia, like cleared my head a little bit, and came back and I watched the film Milk with Sean Penn. And the morning after I watched Milk, I was waking up to go to work, my advertising job, and was in between snoozes on the alarm. And I was thinking about the film. And in particular, there's a photograph of Harvey Milk, and he's holding a sign in the San Francisco Pride March. And the sign read, "I'm from Woodmere, New York." And after watching the film and after learning more about Harvey Milk, I was like, why are you saying you're from Woodmere? Like, everyone associates you with San Francisco, this big gay Mecca where you were elected. But even Harvey Milk isn't from quote unquote gay city. He's from this town on Long Island that most people have never heard of.
Yep.
And that resonated with me so much, because even though I live here in New York City, I'm not from here. I'm from Driftwood, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I know that that message of you're not alone, no matter where you are, would have resonated with me so much as a gay teenager growing up on a ranch in Texas. No neighbors and little access to culture and different people. And the message of you're not alone just really struck a chord with me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wanted to get that message out there through storytelling. And so it really, the idea came from being inspired by that film and Harvey Milk. It all just hit me that morning before I went to work. And I knew I wanted to collect stories and share them and get them out there. My big concern then was, would I have time to do this and how can I do it? And because as great as advertising is, it also takes up a lot of time, mm-hmm. evenings and weekends and unpredictable schedules. And so I was worried that this might get put on the back burner and that it might never see the light of day. So I saw Milk on Wednesday, thought of the idea on Thursday, and Friday I went into work and I was laid off. This was in the height of the recession, December 2008, when just everyone was being laid off, and I was laid off. And I've never been fired or laid off or anything from a job. And it was very scary. I went to school for this. I was on this path, on a career path. And then suddenly I had this, pipe dream of wanting to do something and collect and share stories. But also I was leaving this path that was definitely more stable. It didn't have any purpose for me. So,
It's really interesting that you bring this up, because, and I'm going to just make this really short. These are the moments, I believe these are the moments that we literally sit there and say, what the f-? Yet in those moments is when we really find our truth and our path.
Yeah. I think that those moments might be happening more than you realize, but if you're not looking for them, you don't see them and you don't take advantage of them.
Well, not only if you're not looking for them, but if you're not allowing them, if you're not being really conscious to, wait, did I just miss something? I think we all get so busy with our day-to-day lives that sometimes we go, well, wait, that nudge was there. And then 2 months later, okay, that there's another nudge. It's kind of similar to that one I felt a couple of months ago. And then finally, nudge after nudge after nudge, there's that saying, the universe is going to keep teaching you the same lesson until you finally freaking learn it.
Yep.
But
yeah,
it's one of those things when we're open to receiving it. So here you are in the midst of all this, you get the layoff, and what started to happen for you, man?
Yeah. So it was right before the holidays, which is really nice to be laid off the day I was flying home for the holidays.
Right.
And I went home to Texas and I told my family what had happened, and they were, what are you going to do? Are you going to look for another job? And I started kind of testing the waters a little bit and being like, I don't know yet. Like, I want something more. And I still thinking about this idea. And what was really nice is everyone in my family was like, do it, go for it. It's hopefully you can get health insurance and pay yourself, but go for it. That's important. And I didn't have the idea of turning it into a nonprofit. All I knew that I wanted is that I wanted to share stories. So I started immediately emailing all my friends, letting them know that I want to start collecting and sharing stories and to submit some written stories. And then, weird things kept happening for the next few months. Like, I would need never made a website. So I needed somebody to help me with that. And I started telling my friends and one of my best friends, his name is Rafi. I was like, yeah, so I'm getting these stories, but I don't know how to do this. And he's like, oh, that I double majored in journalism and computer science, right? And I was like, nope, I didn't know that. I forgot about the computer science part. And so he helped me build the site. And then I needed a designer, like a graphic mm-hmm. designer. And I was at a dinner in this part of New York I'd never been before. And at this restaurant I had never been to before. And having dinner with my friends, and I felt a tap on my shoulder, and it was this guy that I used to work with in my first advertising job. Uh-huh. And we caught up, and he said, what are you up to? And I told him about this website that I'm building. And I told him, yeah, I'm just like, I'm at the stage now where I need a designer. And he's like, oh, well, my friend and I, we just launched our own design company. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for pro bono clients just to get like some work done. And so, all of a sudden that landed in my lap also. And all these things just kept coming my way that I needed. And it was just a really amazing experience. And from the time that I thought of the idea for I'm From Driftwood to launching was only 3 months. And it was, which is not very long. And I think how fortunate I was and, to have all these things kind of fall in my lap. And so we launched in late March 2009. And after thinking of the idea in late December 2008, so it was pretty.
But, some of what you've just brought up, and I think this kind of relates to our own coming out stories in so many ways, there's so many parallels, is just the thought that you knew you wanted to do this, but you didn't have any idea how you were going to make it happen, is a parallel to our own coming out journeys. We know we want to be truthfully who we are. We want to step out. We want to share this piece of ourselves, but we don't know how it's going to go down. We don't know what's going to happen. And I think often we forget, and as I do the work with people, everybody thinks there's some magic thing that happens to the coming out journey, that there's a magic formula that you do this. And I always take people back to that space of, think about something else that's been really difficult for you to do in your life. I don't care what it is. It could have been that first time you stood, on the, the peewee baseball team going, I can't hit that ball. Or it could be that first time you tried to ride your bike or get up on skates or any of those different things, but somehow you did this thing. And when we dial back into those moments and go, okay, so you did that, how can you bring forward some of this stuff? Also, in your story, I hear the parallels of really putting this out to the universe and being willing to embrace that the universe is hearing you, but you have to be really fully in on these things for the universe to really hear you, my opinion at least. And it sounds like the universe did hear you. Everything started falling into place. So you didn't initially start with the videos, right? It was mostly the written stories, right? And then you jumped into it. So what was the turning point for the video? What was that? When did you realize, hey, we need another medium here to really attract people? Or what was the thought process?
Yeah, it's funny because we launched with the written stories, and about a month after launching, the stories were just flooding in. Like, different LGBT blogs were sharing I'm From Driftwood, and people were really responding well to it. And I had this idea of doing it was really just going to be a short little PR video. I was going to walk around New York with a little whiteboard and have people write where they're from and just, show like, look, people are from everywhere, and have the I'm From Driftwood logo on it and just like a little thing to send out. And I asked one of my friends to help me film it one weekend, and he couldn't. So he referred me to another mutual friend. His name is Marquise. And I asked him if he could do it. And he said, he kind of pushed back a little bit. He's like, I want to do something, but I don't really like that idea. And I was like, hey, what's wrong with the idea? And he's like, well, it's just, what if we actually just film people telling you their story? And, so it's a new way to do these stories, but on video. And I was like, okay, sure, we can try that. Why don't you come to New York? He still lives in Philadelphia. So we came to New York and we filmed two in one weekend, kind of experimental. And it worked out really, really well. And the stories were great. And he filmed them and edited them. And we launched them and people just latched onto them. And once we started, we're like, well, we can't stop now since people love them. And so over the years, we, have been releasing them off and on. And then about 2 years ago, we turned it into a weekly program. So every single Wednesday, we upload a new video story. So
you've had some people from all over and some big names, some celebrities all chime in on this. How does that feel, man?
It feels great. My biggest concern is that people wouldn't get it. And the getting it part is, it's not a coming out story site. It's just a first person LGBT story site. So, I didn't want it to be all coming out stories because it's just, that's one theme over and over again. And You know, so I always tell people, just like, share any story from your life involving you being LGBT that's meaningful to you.
Yep.
And because of that, I've gotten stories that I never could have predicted, or, you know, some people are like, I don't know what story to share. Like, you have to help me figure out a story. I'm like, I don't know your life. Like, think of, you know, the most emotional in any way story that you love telling, whether it's hilarious, whether it's really sad and heartbreaking, whether it's, you know, very inspiring, anything that kind of elicits emotion and in any way. And, you know, the stories that we've shared have just been all over the place in the best way possible. And yeah, so people have really connected with that. And of course, I love getting stories from some more famous people. We have, you know, Dustin Lance Black, which was meaningful to me personally because Milk, which he wrote, inspired the site. So that was really, it was kind of felt like it was full circle. And Laverne Cox, she shared her story before Orange is the New Black was released. We found her because she was, you know, a trans activist, even before Orange is the New Black. And one day I realized we were getting so many comments on her YouTube video, her I'm From Driftwood video. And I was like, what is going on? Like, why are so many people watching this all of a sudden? And then I, of course, realized about, you know, or learned about Orange is the New Black. But yeah, it's great. And some people, a lot of people are like, oh, you should get Anderson Cooper's story. You should get, you know, so-and-so's story. You should get Ellen's story. And I was like, well, I'd love to, but we don't want to become a celebrity story site either. But we, you know, of course, we would love to get, you know, story from some more famous people, especially because the stories we get are more intimate and small in a way. It really just shows who they are. So it's nice to get a peek inside the more real lives of people.
You know, it's interesting to watch the parallel of I'm From Driftwood and this podcast, because I'm in the same way. I love telling the coming out stories and having people share those pieces, but I also want to hear what's life about. You know, what is going on with life? Like today, we're talking about just life in general, about what you're doing with your life. And I haven't, yes, you could share your own coming out story, but sometimes I think it's better to let's reflect what life really looks like for those of us in the LGBTQ world, so that people can see it's just life. Yes, you may have the challenge of coming out. You may have some experiences, but there's life. You're just living life purely and simply.
Yep.
I'm curious though, for you, Nathan, what's been the biggest piece of this for you? How has it impacted your life to be behind this?
Well, in a way it's completely changed it, because now my life is, you know, dedicated towards the LGBT community. Once I left advertising and started doing this, I completely traded everything that I didn't want for everything that I wanted. Now I'm not paid as well, and I don't get to travel the world on these shoots. And, you know, I sacrificed all that stuff for exclusively to have purpose in my life. And I would never, ever, ever trade that again. It's like, I'm so much happier now. And this is like, what a gift to be able to, you know, for my job doing what I love and, you know, being able to help the community that I'm part of. So it's changed my life in that regard.
How has it changed you as a gay man?
It's taught me a lot, you know, because I think in the LGBT community as a whole, it's easy to just stick with your own group, you know, and as a gay man, I just go to gay bars and I have mostly just gay friends, and, you know, I don't really kind of go out of my circle much, but right. Doing I'm From Driftwood, I hear stories from the entire spectrum. We really try hard to collect stories from diverse storytellers and make sure the themes and topics are all different. And, you know, so anyone can find a story that they relate to. Learn so much about the transgender community and what it's like to be different races and be LGBT. You know, how do you be multiple like minorities? You know, so what is that experience like? And what is it like to be, you know, to find love as, you know, what is that different for like lesbians or also like the bisexual community? What is it like to be kind of invisible even within the LGBT community as a bisexual person? It's affected me as a gay man because I've learned so much about my own community that I otherwise might not have had the opportunity, or I might not have known that I needed to learn about the rest of the community. So I'm grateful for that.
That's awesome. So I have a little confession to make to you. So after you and I did my video, mm-hmm. And then it got published, and then it actually was part of something that showed up on Huffington Post. I got the most hate mail I've ever received in my life.
Oh, no.
And I loved every moment of it because it taught me a lot. it taught me a lot about how I'm not just an anomaly in our own gay community. And I'm not the only one who's been married and came out and had kids and all that stuff. So that tiara fell off long ago when I thought that I was the only one. But what really helped me see is this is such a volatile conversation in the world when you come out and stand in that. And I'm starting to go through it again because my book has just come out. And so now there's, you know, as it's starting to get known and stuff, I'm starting to get little tidbits of hate mail here and there. But to me, I realize in that moment, that's when I'm causing closed minds. Even if they stay closed, they're having to open up and consider. And if nothing else, the work you're doing is really causing people to stop and consider, whether it's within our own community, external of our community. It's beautiful work that you're doing. And I wanted you to hear that from me because that was really a very special moment. I never have shared that with you because I just kind of wanted to go through it. And I knew at some point in time, I wanted us to reconnect like we're doing today and have this conversation. So thank you for making me one of the most hated people for a while. Because it really did. I grew a lot from it. And it made me have a tougher skin too. It's like, you know, man, if I'm going to be doing this, I gotta get some tough skin here.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with me because it's, you know, especially your story, which, and it's actually a common theme. Like whenever we share other stories of people who came out later in life, you know, when they had kids and, you know, some people look at that as, you know, what did you do to your wife? How could you do that to her? But you're right. I think they're thinking about it a little more. And it's funny because I used to monitor comments more than I do now. Yeah. So I would delete the hateful comments. And I do if it's hateful, but not sure. Part of the conversation, you know, if it's just
I totally get it.
And I remove that. But now what I realize is that the rest of the community will come in defense by commenting back starts a conversation, which is important. So I think the people who say, what did you do to your wife and your kids? How could you do that? And I think the real question is, what did the person who's commenting do to create a society where you don't feel like you have to be closeted?
Right.
You know, and
that is the conversation. That's the piece that people miss is what did society create where we couldn't be who we are? Okay, we're still battling it. And people go, really? We're still battling this? Yes. You don't even realize. Most people who say it's like, go live in the mid-states. Go be there. You're going to find it's still this horrible thing. And it's kind of sad because I even have some people come into my practice now that are 20. I think the youngest one lately I've had was 26. And this particular man is getting married in 6 months. He knows he's gay. He has tried everything he can to, quote, fight it. But he's moving forward because this is what is expected of him. And the only reason he's working with me is to gain some sanity. He says, I'm not coming out. I just need some sanity. I need to come to a place where it's okay for me to be who I am and to embrace and love myself just as I am. And he's made conscious decisions that he will live his life as a married, quote, heterosexual, knowing that he's gay, and he will make his gay life work outside of that. And that's when I want to sit and go, see, society, we're still doing this. We are still doing this. Now, I realize outside of the realm of, you know, the United States and in other countries, there's a lot of cultural things that cause this to happen as well. But so before we wrap up, there's another important project I know you're starting to work on. And I personally am so proud to watch you do the things you do because you seem to have a pulse on finding the things that are truly either not being addressed or need to be addressed more. So why don't you talk about this new project you're working on?
Yeah, really excited about this new program. It's by far the biggest program that we have. Every time I say we, I mean the board of directors. We're an official nonprofit, so we have a board. And so it's called the Generations Initiative. And the name might change over time. We're still developing some aspects of it. But the purpose of the Generations Initiative is to focus on stories of LGBTQ elders. And they, more than anyone else in the LGBT community in the past and in the future, have seen they will have seen more change in our community than anyone ever has or will. You know, when they were younger, in all 50 states, it was illegal to be sexually active as somebody of the same gender or to simply be arrested for being LGBT. And now they can go get married to somebody of the same gender. And they saw that full range of progression.
Yep.
And everyone right now has seen elements of that growth and that progression, but they have seen the most. And I really want to capture their stories. And more than anyone else, they've been told to keep it quiet and keep it in the closet. And they deserve to know that their stories are important and that we want to hear them. Young people want to hear their stories. We respect them, who they are. We're all standing on their shoulders, you know, and also, unfortunately, it's a trend of them going back into the closet when they go into these nursing homes or, you know, as they get older and need more support. And so we're hoping these stories will kind of shine a light on their needs currently, while also preserving the history and the lives that they lived before us. So
their approach is very tribal in so many ways. I mean, the tribes, you know, Indian tribes and other cultural tribes, that their elders were revered and their stories were captured so as to teach the future generations of what had been, so that the future generations could be even better in who they are. And there's nothing, you know, I equate it to, and I kick myself in the ass a lot of times for this. I think of just my own personal heritage of my grandparents and specifically my grandmother's, where I don't really have any of their beautiful recipes that are the things that I go, yeah, when I was a kid, I really enjoyed this, but I never really understood, where did that recipe come from? Why did that become a staple in our family, you know, dining experiences? Because I know there's got to be stories here. And to equate what you're talking about with the stories of the elder generations in the LGBTQ world, to me, is critical. I mean, when I go and speak like I'm going to do this afternoon, I often get the questions, well, what was the inspiration? And the inspiration for me was going through an experience with one of my uncles, who was one of the very first ones to pass from HIV and AIDS. Had I not experienced that, I wouldn't be so adamant about why it's important. And when I hear younger generations going, ah, screw it, you know, oh, it'll never happen to me. It's like, no, you don't get where the fight has gone and the everything we've gone through to get to this point where HIV and AIDS isn't as much of a stigma, even though there still is, but isn't as much as it was. So congratulations, man, on this move. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really excited about it. Anyone who, and this is all from, you know, research, but anyone who gets older has this natural tendency to want to share their stories and their life with somebody younger. You know, that's not exclusive to the LGBT community. But what is exclusive is that our LGBT community is the elders, that their generation was so like catastrophically, you know, hit by HIV and AIDS that we've already lost so many stories in history that we'll never know. And it's really the most precious generation that we have. And there's a real sense of urgency to collect their stories and history. And the first thing that I want them to know is their stories and their history matters, and that we want to hear it. Younger people do care about them. It's such a youth dominated culture in general that, you know, it's easy to overlook that, but their stories are very important. And
I can tell you this, their stories, some of those people's stories are still being lived in the closet. They're still, I come across elders all the time. In fact, the oldest person I have worked with in my 6-7 years, whatever it's been, of doing coming out work was 74 years old and just coming out.
Yeah.
And you just hear those stories and you go, wow, for 74 years to really be holding all that in. I mean, you know, I was 38. I don't remember, you were in your teens when all this happened for you. I just can't imagine. I can't imagine the emotional impact, let alone the physical impact. And then also living through eras where you actually witnessed what was happening to the LGBT community, knowing you were part of that community, but you could not and would not, for your own well-being, admit you were part of that community. It's just, it's amazing. So awesome. So man, one of the things I always ask each guest to do as we wrap things up is, you know, if you could give someone a piece of advice from your own journey or at moving forward, who may be struggling, needing some support or just some life advice around, you know, being in the LGBTQ community, what would be something you'd love to leave the listeners with?
Don't keep it to yourself. Whatever it is, whether it's coming out, whether you're staying closeted, or whether you're starting some project that you're passionate about, tell everyone. If it's a secret that you're revealing, like you're coming out, then, you know, only tell people that you feel comfortable with. But it's human nature to want to see people succeed. You do it all the time. If somebody tells you like, oh, I'm starting this new business and it's a coffee shop, then they just kind of go through their mind and their mental Rolodex of who of their friends loves coffee or who has experience starting a coffee shop. And it's so natural for people to want to help other people succeed that it happened with me starting I From Driftwood. Everyone just, I say the universe revealed itself to me, or, you know, it was like magic. I use all these different phrases. It's just, it's humans. We want to help people succeed. And, absolutely, you know, making introductions is the easiest thing. And people, you know, so just tell everyone what you want to do in the world. They won't even be able to help it. It'll be subconscious. They're going to help you in some way.
I think that's a great place to wrap it up today. So I want to just say, really good connecting with you again, Nathan. And thanks for doing what you do in the world, man. You're definitely a brilliant light on the planet.
Well, thanks, Rick. It was good talking to you again.
You too. And if you've been listening to this and you've been inspired, make sure you hop on over to imfromdriftwood.org and check out Nathan's work and sign up for any updates he has so that when he launches the Generations Initiatives, you're part of that movement as well. And as always, if you like what we have said, talked about, have something you'd like to pass on to someone, give us a rating or review on any of the ways that you find us, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever it may be. It always helps to get the word out. Also, if you're one of our little tweet friends, don't forget it's at Rick Clemens, and the hashtag for the show is hashtag coming out lounge. That's pound coming out lounge. And with that, we're going to wrap up and say, just get out there and be proud of where you're from and who you are, and go out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and you've been listening to the Coming Out Lounge, and we'll catch you next week.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.